Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
It is Thursday, the 7th of October. You're listening to the Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe's conversation show with a panel of invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day with you for the next 2 hours. Of course, it being the 7th of October, we'll be asking, and I put the poll up on the Talk Radio Europe official Facebook page on the second anniversary of the October 7th attacks, are we any closer to peace in Gaza? If you want to get your thoughts, if you got any thoughts on that, the situation as it's developing, Trump, of course, making his peace plans. We'll be looking at that. And also the flotilla, Greta Thunberg and all, arriving in, she's been deported back to Athens. The Spanish contingent arrived in Madrid this morning as well, late last night, to scenes of people sort of punching the air, etc. Even though there's a claim that one of the Spanish delegation on the flotilla bit a Israeli medic as she was being treated. Anyway, opposed to nothing, but also asking the question, do we think with the some of the pronouncements have been coming out in both Spain and throughout Europe and indeed in the UK after the attacks last week on the Manchester synagogue, is it any safer if you are Jewish? Do you feel safer in the UK, in Europe, or do you think that perhaps world opinion is putting you in the whole basket of the situation in Gaza? If you want to send me a WhatsApp, it's +34 645 99 67 95. You can call me on 952 78 4000, email me on studio@tre.radio. Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe official. As well as that, we'll be looking as the Conservative Party conference is currently underway. Is there any relevance for the Conservative Party anymore? They seem to be trying to become more Reform UK than Reform UK itself. Is this the death knell for conservatism with a small C? And if time permits, Stephen Ritson was displaying his linguistic skills yesterday, but the situation in France as well. Once again, zut alors, the French political system seems to be in turmoil. That's all going to be coming up in the next 2 hours. Anything else you want to talk about? It could be local, national, or international. Let's get your viewpoint across.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000.
Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Looking at the front pages this morning, most of the papers mark the two-year anniversary of the deadly attack on Israel by Hamas. The Guardian's coverage includes an interview with a man whose brother is one of the hostages still being held in Gaza. Gal Gilboa Dalal tells the story. He still feels as though he is living the agonizing endless day when his brother Guy was kidnapped. The front pages of the I paper and the Times focus on the planned pro-Palestine rallies set to take place at some UK universities today. Both say the Prime Minister and the Home Secretary called for the demonstrations to be postponed, but the organisers insisted they should go ahead because the attacks on the 7th of October triggered the fighting in Gaza. Daily Telegraph reports that the Home Office and MI5 were blindsided by the collapse of a Chinese spying case last month. Downing Street has dismissed suggestions of any government interference in the case after it was reported that senior Whitehall officials met to discuss the trial early last month before the charges were dropped. Front page of The Guardian says nurses' leaders fear the government's proposed new rules on foreign staff could cause a crisis in the NHS and social care. The Royal College of Nursing has warned the health service could cease to function. The paper says it's contacted the Home Office for comment. A few of the papers highlight the empty seats at some of the key speeches at this year's Conservative Party conference in Manchester. The Telegraph says it may have been a mistake for Shadow Chancellor Samuel Stride to make his address trying to reassert the Tories' economic reputation early on a Monday morning as the hall was half empty. The I says there is no mood of despair at the conference, more one of emptiness. Almost all the front pages feature photographs of the Queen of the Bonk Buster, Dame Jilly Cooper, whose death was announced yesterday. She was 88. Romp in Peace is the Sun's headline. The One and Only, says the Daily Mirror. The Express says Dame Jilly revolutionised reading habits with her saucy page turners. The Guardian says, most of all, Jilly made being a grown-up look fun. So those front pages, top of my paper pile this morning, is the I paper. UK Gaza protests going ahead today on anniversary of October 7th massacre. The Times, PM's anger at student protests on October 7th. The Daily Mirror, mirror on the Gaza border. Peace talks begin, but bombs still fall 2 years after October 7th horror, and they call it hope in hell. The Guardian, Labour's new visa rules put NHS at risk, warn nurses, and also a great picture of Dame Jilly Cooper on the front. May her hereafter be filled with impossibly handsome men and devoted dogs. The Sun, Romp in Peace, Jilly, Queen Camilla leads tribute to Queen of the Bonkbusters. And they've got, there's actually, apparently it was the last picture, official portrait of Dame Jilly. The Metro, police dismantle huge phone theft gang. Time to call your lawyer. The Kingpins had smuggled up to 40% of all snatched London headsets to China. Meanwhile, the Daily Mail, biggest phone gang smashed. Police hold Kingpins, who sent thousands of stolen mobiles to Hong Kong high-rise. And also, again, Queen Camilla and Jilly Cooper. May her hereafter be filled with impossibly handsome men and devoted dogs. Again, Dame Jilly on the front of the Telegraph. MI5 kept in dark in China spy trial fiasco. FT, three strikes, latest French premier quits. The Daily Express, Tories pledge blitz on scumbag store thieves. This is building stronger cases against shoplifters. And finally, the Daily Star goes with something completely different. It says that AI can solve Maddie mystery, quoting an investigator who tells the paper that robot detectives may crack case of Madeleine McCann. And it also highlights the Queen's tribute to the legend that was Dame Jilly. And those are your front pages of the papers on this Tuesday, the 7th of October.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Viewpoint
with Giles Brown. And thanks to Iberian Tax, who are our new sponsor here on Viewpoint. Good to have you on board, making sure that people like my panel can come in here and be treated to as many coffees, teas and savoury snacks as they want. But most importantly, we can pay the phone bill because we go live to our man in London from somewhere on the old River Thames. It's Rex Leyland. Rex, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Giles, and good morning, Spain. How is everybody? What's going on since the hot, sticky summer?
Well, obviously, you see, I mean, it's the first time you've been since we took our summer break. It's still, you'll be happy to know, it's still lovely and warm here today. The sun is shining. You'll be chomping at the bit, if not slipping the moorings. Go on.
I'm going to counter that because yesterday, here on the Thames, where I'm moored, the weather was absolutely stunning. There wasn't a cloud in the sky all day. It was hotter than, as hot as San Pedro, certainly. And I did top up my tan, so now looking a little bit dark-ish.
You're looking like the salty old sea dog. Also joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo. Andres, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Giles. As always,
good morning, Andrew.
Always an honour to share the programme with a legend like Rex in London.
You are so kind, and may I reciprocate?
Rex, just quickly, it was quite an interesting summer in London. I mean, we're going to go back to the main sub, obviously, it being October 7th. But obviously,
we got it.
Yeah, we have to. But obviously, it was a long, hot summer, and we had this huge march in London. I mean, the Unite the Kingdom or the Unite the Country march, which saw 150,000 people taking the streets of the capital. I'm not saying were you taking to the streets, but as you're there or thereabouts. What was your take on the mood?
Well, one thing I've never done in my life, actually, is I've never demonstrated for no particular reason, because I think there are other ways that one can demonstrate, and I use my mouth rather than any physical presence. But everybody, of course, has the right to demonstrate. We're getting so many different strains of demonstrations at the moment. I think that the right to demonstrate, of course, is part of our psyche, the British freedom, etc., etc. But what happened this last Saturday was very unusual in the fact that the government begged for this particular march not to take place, given what happened in Manchester on Thursday, which was unusual. And with regards to the Tommy Robinson style of demonstration, again, there is undoubtedly in England at the moment, because I only talk about England, I've not been out of England, I haven't been to Ireland or Wales, sadly, or Scotland, but there is definitely an undertone. And what I found fascinating was that at the Labour conference, I don't think they were aware of what really is going on the streets. I think that is the message that this government is not receiving.
It's interesting you talk about that, and I was going to come on to this, but as you've mentioned it, I think we'll kick off with this, because I wanted to come on to this subject. The attacks that took place in Manchester on Thursday, absolutely horrendous. The march that took place over the weekend, which was for the Palestine Action Group, wasn't it, if I remember correctly?
Yeah. And Save the Juries or something.
Right. And with the...
It wasn't Palestine, it was the jury. It was against. It was against the government's decision to outlaw the Palestine
Action group,
exactly.
And here in Spain, we have seen a series of strikes at public colleges, teachers and pupils as well, having the day off, in support of Palestine. And I just, and I was listening to a couple of podcasts as I do. And I'm posing the question, 952-78-4000, or you can WhatsApp me, +34 645 9967 95.
Do it faster, please, Charles. Do it faster.
Do it faster. Okay. So the WhatsApp, +34 645 9967 95. I'm asking the question because if you are Jewish, do you feel safe in the UK? Do you feel safe in Spain? Some friends of mine whose children go to Jewish schools were saying that there are now cords of security, and this, if you're a 9-year-old child going to school, to have to go through to have security is quite a frightening prospect. And are we in danger of lumping everybody in as being sort of pro Netanyahu? Rex, it must be, you know, quite a tricky one, to put it mildly.
Well, I've said this on your show before, Giles. I'm going to say it one more time, and I think it's very succinct as to what is going in relation to what is going on today. You have to remember the difference between anti-Semitism and Zionism. Now, anti-Semitism, if you are an anti-Semite, you are actually against a Jew and an Arab because they're both Semitic people. That is the meaning of the word anti-Semite, anti-Semitic. If you're a Zionist, you could be any religion in the world or come from any part of the world and say, I'm a Zionist, because that means you believe in the existence of the state of Israel, which emanated around 48 when Israel was created by Balfour, rightly or wrongly, and people became ardent Zionists. There were Zionist movements all over the world. That is the belief in the existence of the state of Israel. And sadly today, in modern politics, everybody gets confused and they tar everybody with the same brush. That a Zionist is also, somebody who is not to be accepted, and or a Jewish person is a Zionist. And there are a lot of Jews who are not Zionists. They're Jewish, but they don't believe in what Israel is doing, or they have second thoughts about what is going on. From a personal perspective, I feel that Netanyahu has outstepped his mark. I think that something's got to stop, and it's got to stop very soon, because it is horrendous what is going on. And it looks like, as today, of course, is the anniversary of the outrage when Israel was caught off guard, sadly, and by God, hasn't the price been paid by so many? It's something that we all have to try and achieve and spread a more positive word within all our communities, irrespective of where you're from or what you are, that we cannot tolerate what is going on today. We're living in a very troubled world. Mm. And I think now Andreas needs to say something.
Well, I just want to just quickly as well, because in the same way that the terrorists who attacked the synagogue in Manchester does not represent, Islam.
No.
Then
he's a nutter. He's an isolated nutter who was out on bail for rape, and we all know, and you look at his father and where the family came from, and they were granted presence in our country all those years ago. And having read the stories about him in the press over the weekend, I mean, the man was certainly out for lunch. I mean, there was nothing there. That
got a phone call coming in. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Gil from Kelpie.
Morning, Gil.
Good morning.
Morning, Gil.
The previous caller said that there's a difference between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. There is no difference whatsoever. Anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Many people don't want to say that they're anti-Semites because it's not...
That's not correct. I'm sorry, that is not correct.
That is correct, and I'll explain why. That is correct.
Let Gil speak for a second,
your
Rex.
Your definition, you said that anti-Zionists are people who support the existence of Israel. You said that. Okay,
that's
well,
what exactly
you
what
said,
that. Said.
You said
that's what
quoting,
I said.
I'm quoting what you say. Now,
said,
all the people in Israel who live in Israel, just a minute, let me talk.
Rex, just let Gil talk and then you can come back, okay?
All the people in Israel, okay, support the state of Israel, otherwise they wouldn't live there, right? That's half of the Jews in the world, okay? Let's look at the other half of the Jews in the world who live outside of Israel. Well, almost all of them support Israel. There are very few who don't support Israel. That includes a few leftists who are nominally Jewish because it's defined as an ethnicity. So if you're born Jewish, if your mother's Jewish, you're Jewish, doesn't matter what you believe in. Those could be leftist people who are against Israel, and they exist. Okay? They make a lot of noise, but there are very few of them. Then there's another group of anti-Zionists. These are Jews who are very, very religious, who believe Israel shouldn't exist before the Messiah comes. Okay? I don't know what that's based on. Okay? But that's what they believe. Okay? And they are the others who call themselves anti-Zionists. But as a percent of the population of the Jews, they are very little. So those who are anti-Zionists are anti almost all the Jews in the world, plus all the people who support Israel. Okay? So what's the difference? They are anti-Semites. Okay?
Rex. Rex and Andres. Right. Rex first.
You have to remember that, of course, the population of Israel is not all Jewish. That's the first thing. That's your first error. Because there are loads of people living in Israel, and Arabs who've lived there for years peacefully and contributing to society and the community, and they're not Jewish. So that's mistake number one.
80%
of
Israel
again, they're not all Jewish. They're not all
80% of the population of Israel.
Okay, well, that's not 100%. That's
okay,
still 20% who are non-Jewish.
Many of the 20%
children.
Who are not, many of the
anyway, that doesn't
who are
matter.
Not Jewish, okay, are not against the state of Israel. Most Arab citizens, and those who are citizens of Israel.
No one's
okay?
against the state of Israel. They're against the state of the government. That is what's causing the aggravation in Israel.
Well, you can be against a government policy. That doesn't make you anti-Zionist or anti-Semite. What I'm
absolutely.
Saying is that
I don't agree with the politics, but I'm a Zionist. I believe in the existence of the state of Israel.
Okay, but those who say I'm an anti-Zionist, they are anti-Semites, okay, in disguise.
Right. Okay. Thank you for
A loose interpretation. Okay.
Gil, thank you for your call in. Andres, you want to come in on a point there?
Well, I'd like to put a little bit of order to all of the things that we touched
always
in
live,
this
always
morning.
Live,
you've thrown out so many things on the table. In terms of the anniversary of 7th of October, I remember being in this very program the day after that happened, and we were all appalled. One of the things I said at the time, I couldn't believe this human race can produce that kind of carnage, that kind of violence. Well, my position hasn't changed since that day. I still think that was absolutely appalling and everything else. The only thing that has changed during these 2 years, apart from the reaction of Israel in the defense, existential defense of the territory and the livelihood, is that the public opinion out there has shifted from supporting Israel to support a Palestinian cause that has its roots on a terrorist organization who have been ruling viciously during nearly 20 years in the Gaza Strip.
It's the scale, though, isn't it? It's the scale of the response that has turned this people.
And whatever, I know your listeners will just be against what I'm going to just say now, but they have used the civilian population as a shield, if you like, to protect their interests. Interests, they go from financial interest over the years, collecting money from everyone to enrich themselves and to and build tunnels and collect weapons for the devastation of Israel, which they tried 2 years ago. but also on a system that educates their own children into hatred. And that is the seed and the root of the problem. Of course, what we've seen in terms of the war efforts of Israel in Palestine, are not, you know, in Gaza, I should say, sorry. Nobody likes to see that. Nobody likes to see civilians being killed or anything like that. But we are focusing the blame on the people who started defending themselves. And nobody's pointing out at Hamas. Now, one thing you said at the very beginning was, what do we think about this peace deal that was on the table? Again, I referred to the program last week. I've referred to the program 2 years ago, and I referred to last week. We all agreed, and I think some of the callers did. I believe Alf was here. We all agreed that the 20 points that there were on the table were reasonable points. They were on the table, and they should take that to start building a peace process that, on those basis, could be a long-lasting one. Only to come this week to find that the spanner in the wheel has been put in again by Hamas. So you can't trust these guys. These guys, they're not in the business for peace. These guys want to disrupt everything. And they now, in terms of the peace deal, they're not even getting the support of their own Arab neighboring nations who are pressuring them into getting onto this peace deal. I really hope that they can get an agreement in the next few days and the hostages are released and some kind of withdrawal of the IDF is in place and start building something towards a safer future. But my fear here, and this is just a personal thing, I have no evidence of this, is that the delay tactic from Hamas is because I truly believe that they don't know where the hostages are. I don't know where the bodies are. They don't know where their bodies are. They don't know where everyone is. And they are trying to gather their own intelligence to be able to produce the part of the deal that says these hostages should go back to Israel. And I think that's the problem. Of course, as I said, I have no evidence of this, and I might be totally wrong. But I get a feeling inside that that could be going towards that
Andreas, point.
Yeah.
Andreas, I compliment you on that thought? It's something that I hadn't thought about. I think it's highly constructive of you to think in that way. And probably, regrettably, you might be right. I mean, I just didn't think of it like that. But, of course, they're stalling. But remember that Hamas is run by greedy people, very rich, greedy people. There's been pictures of them, you know, sitting on their large sofas in the Middle East, in various Emirates, counting the money. We know that the aid is captured, that's sent in, and then sold to the people, and we know all of that. So, but what you've just said is actually quite thought-provoking.
Now, we've got the peace. I mean, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. So they are actually, there are the first tentative steps for a peace deal. Okay, you've got to start somewhere. The argument is, here's the thing, it's the disproportionate. If Israel had a window of opportunity where it was a huge groundswell of support, because it was horrendous and horrific what happened. But you've seen that pendulum swing. The IDF has not allowed journalists to go in to cover the Gaza, which obviously is a problem for independent reporting. Reporters have been killed and also, where do we stop with this? And my fear is that Israel becomes a pariah state. You see people going for the soft targets, which are, you know, the Eurovision Song Contest, the sporting events, the scenes that we saw at the Vuelta de España stopping in Madrid. And somebody's saying, there was a story in the Spanish press about there were some Israeli tourists in a bar in Spain and the owner threw them out because of Gaza. And it's like, if we are lumping everybody in like this, You know, we are never, you know, we are a real problem. Does. Yes, I know ignorance. It's ignorance, right? But this is a problem for ordinary people who are just trying to live their lives. Yeah. Andreas.
Just a couple of points. I think in this whole conflict, for me, there are two key points. The first one is what started everything, which is the anniversary today, which is the Hamas atrocities. The second key point in the whole thing was the first ceasefire and exchange of hostages and prisoners. The scenes that we saw at the point where the hostages were given back to Israel, those scenes, when I saw that on TV, I said, oh my God, these guys don't want to stop. Because what we saw was humiliation of the hostages. We saw a display of strength in terms of weapon, in terms of propaganda. We saw civilian people watching that, excited, cheering, filming with their phones and everything else. That, to me, was evidence that they didn't want a lasting peace. They didn't want to start the peace at that point. And that was at the point where there was a ceasefire. And you would think that anyone with some sense, seeing what's happening to their own population and the might of the IDF bombarding everything and everywhere, would say, hold on a second, let's stop here and try to build on this ceasefire and into peace. But they didn't want that. It was evident for the images that I saw that they didn't want that. And that has continued from that
but
point.
But could you not argue that those chaotic scenes is A, because, you know, Hamas aren't organized in the way that the IDF is, and also because it's a culture clash. They were celebrating this whole thing.
You say that, Jazz. They weren't organized like that. But when the Israelis complained and said, this is very serious, the following weeks at the exchange of prisoners, they changed and they tried to organize it so much. It's not, they're not stupid. They want to display the violence and continue to display violence. And that I thought at the time, anyone with a little bit savvy would have thought, okay, we've got a ceasefire, we've got an exchange of prisoners here, let's build something from here. But they, in my opinion, they didn't want to.
Right. Well, one has to also remember Netanyahu's politics are very, very obtuse. He doesn't. His methodology, I don't think, has been accurate in any way, shape or form. I know for a fact there are a lot of Israelis who disagree and who want peace. The majority want peace. Netanyahu is a politician who has a track record. There are things that have been said about him. I'll say it again, but it may not be true, but I think it is true that they say that once he leaves power, he's got to go back to court because he's been a naughty boy in his past times and will be in court yet again, as he was prior to becoming prime minister all those years ago. And he is surrounded by ultra-right-wing Orthodox Jewish cabinet who push him forward, push him ahead all the time. And it's the politics are wrong. They're wrong. They're wrong for Israel. They're wrong for the world.
There's only so much revenge
you can take. There's only so much revenge.
Look, if you were Israeli and were in Israel, I mean, I certainly wouldn't vote for Netanyahu. The difference is that in Israel, you can vote for someone when there is an election because it's a democracy. And the other thing, apart from his court cases and everything else, Netanyahu to stay in power depends heavily on the far right and the Orthodox the representatives, and they put pressure on him. If he doesn't allow that pressure, if he doesn't go with the pressure from them, the government collapses. And personally, it's a bad thing because he goes to court. And secondly, they becomes you have got a country with instability, political instability, that at this moment in time is not exactly what Israel needs. So he's in a very difficult position. But I'm not a fan of Netanyahu. I'm not a fan of the strategy of total destruction. I don't agree with that. But the focus that I've always had in mind is that all this total destruction that we are seeing, the seed was planted by Hamas, and that's what they are collecting now.
Rex, I'm going to go to a break, and then we're going to come back with more Viewpoint, okay?
Right.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always live, always lively. Joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo and in the UK by Rex Leyland. I just want to go to some of the WhatsApps, which is +34 645 99 67 95. Some of the comments coming in. Jules J, wow, I'm in wholehearted agreement with Rex. Meanwhile, the message was deleted. Very sad. Morning, Gary. Very sad what's happening in Gaza. Israel's actions have been seen as disproportionate internationally, and rightly so, but injustices were being carried out against the Palestinians before this. Israel has the right to defend itself, but Israel has an air force, navy, etc. Palestine has not. Ultimately, the US holds the key to its conclusion. I can foresee the Russians linking what they're doing in Ukraine to what US-backed forces are doing in Gaza. A backdoor deal will be done. I feel no good conclusion. And please remember the difference between a Palestinian Hamas member to a Jew, Israel, and a Zionist. Meanwhile, looking at Richard, Rich, morning to you. Peace in Gaza. Nope. Next. The 73% of Israelis are of Israel are Jewish, not 80%. Apparently, the 7th of October was a Saturday. Netanyahu says he wants to wipe out Gaza. What kind of language is that? What kind of olive branch of peace is Israel offering? Does a genocide define peace? Israel could quite easily allow aid to flood Gaza, so that Hamas don't hold it up. It chooses not to. You are, Andres, either ignores or negates the power of leverage. If they give back the hostages, then Hamas have no cards to play, and they know how Benjamin Netanyahu operates and cannot be trusted. Meanwhile, other WhatsApps coming in. Zionist is a movement which started as terrorists killing British occupation of Israel in the 30s and 40s, and they still are. Example, Netanyahu and his ultra-Zionist ministers. Not all Jews are Zionists. Most believe in two-state solution and would share the Palestine land with Arabs, Christians, and Muslims. They oppose apartheid policy, and they are suppressed by the international Jewish movement, led by very influential financiers and media moguls. Zionism is a disease affecting not only the Middle East, but the USA too. That's from George. Thank you, I think, George. Hamas were democratically elected. That's another one. Thank you. I have no words for Gil, I do, but not broadcastable. Typically conflating Judaism with Zionism, they are not the same. So many Jews around the world who are horrified by what's going on in Gaza. Netanyahu is the one putting a target on Jews' backs, not Islamists. We are not all Zionists. Right, Andres, you want to come in? Yeah, Rex, sorry, yes, I can hear you now.
I've got a quick addition to all of this.
Please do.
Which is going back to the age-old political problem of a government, and of course Israel is a classic example of this, as Italy is another classic example, where you have proportional representation, and that means, of course, it's not first past the post, it is dilution. And I think Israel's problem is its proportional representation, allowing the certain factions in and clubbing together and becoming ultra-right wing and supporting Netanyahu. Of course, we know in Italy, although it's a beautiful and most wonderful country, up until the present prime minister, there has really been turmoil in Italy because of proportional representation, not allowing one single government to stay in power long enough to effect any proper changes to the life of the people. But this new, of course, Italian prime minister, everyone's raving about, she seems to have done rather well in her tenure so far. But we stray from Israel. But I think that proportional representation in Israel is part of the cause of what we're seeing today in that country.
Andrew, any thoughts?
That's the same problem we have here in Spain with proportional representation.
And Spain as well, of course. Yeah. I did forget
Kidnapped. I mean, the government is kidnapped by small groups.
That's a good way of putting it.
So that's what it is. In terms of another thing that has come at the beginning of the program that you threw on the table, Giles, was the anti-Semitism. Again, I think, personally, I think the anti-Semitism, let's identify the anti-Semitism, the anti-Jews, yeah? Let's not start, you know, saying whether the Semites are Arabs and Jews and everything. So it's anti-Semitism as we understand it. Colloquially.
But people forget that Semite can also...
I realise that. But colloquially, everyone says, oh, he's anti-Semitic, means he hates the Jews, yeah?
Absolutely.
So in terms of that, I think the anti-Semitism is been out there for a long, long time. And I know and I've seen it and I've heard people talking privately and everything else. What's happened is with social media, where you can hide behind the screen, it's just given it, and you know, it's opened the door to flourish more into society. And there's been a rise in comments and anti-Semitic attitudes since social media and that kind of thing. On top of that, we've got the conflict in Gaza, which has, you know, elevated that even to higher numbers. But in my opinion, like racism in the United States, it's always been there, but in the closet. Anti-Semitism around the world has been always there, but in the closet. And what we're seeing is that people coming out through social media.
When you have the Spanish Prime Minister saying that he's proud, he supports the people who had the put the demonstration at the end of the World to the Spanish, for example. When you have strikes in schools, which we had in public schools, with teachers and students walking out because of support for Gaza, etc., and we saw the scenes of people returning from this flotilla, the Spanish, the 27 Spanish, one's been held because apparently she bit the doctor who was treating her, so she's now staying in Israel while they work with her. I mean, again, is that going to help the situation if you've got schools going out in support? Because you've got to tell me that Hamas are sitting there going,
there are two things.
Say, okay, there's a school stopping in Wolva, therefore we're going to...
The schools is quite a serious situation, and I'll explain. The first side is the amount of media attention that this kind of displays get, like this flotilla, you know, I mean, they said it was in humanitarian aid, but if you see in the boats, that there's not, you know,
it's
they couldn't carry more than a couple
of... Well, there's two tons of aid.
It's just a way of drawing the attention to these, you know, children, if you like, and they wanted the media attention, and the media has given them the attention, in all fairness, you know, so they've been flooding the media market, if you like, with that kind of rhetoric against Israel and against the Jews and against, you know, the war in Gaza. That's number one. The second thing, which is the more serious one, I don't know if you know about these Rex, but last week, the schools in Spain...
I know nothing about Spain.
Well,
I
I'll tell you very quickly. The schools in Spain, right. I think it was secondary years, yeah?
Right.
And they went on strike, so there's no lessons. Children were sent home.
That's terrible.
Because they were in support of the Palestinian cause. Now, for me, that is very, very serious. I mean, probably the most serious thing that has happened, certainly in Spain, with regards to this conflict. Because this is a conflict that has been going on for many, many years. It's a very, very complex situation with very many actors they've played here in, you know, from the 70s, you know, from Jimmy Carter to Felipe González to today. So, and everyone has tried. It's a conflict that the complexity is so intense that you cannot simplify that to children.
I was going to say, you're tainting the children. Why should they be brought into this?
Exactly.
This
so you're going to have a generation. You're going to have a generation of kids that they are going to have They can form their own opinion, but they need all the information to get the to reach an opinion. And at the moment, I feel that they're not getting all of the information, and they only get it one sided.
Got a caller on the line. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where you're calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. How are you? All right, it's Gary. Here.
Morning, Gary. How are you?
Yeah, morning, panel. Someone's just said a WhatsApp in, which has just sparked me thinking, will we be treating Hamas, after all the atrocities they've committed, in 80 years' time, will we be treating Hamas the same way as we now treat Israel after their atrocities 80-odd years ago?
What do you mean with the bombing of the British, the Elizabeth House?
And the hanging of soldiers, British soldiers from lampposts, etc., and the attempted poisoning of the reservoirs in Germany by it wasn't known as Mossad then, but by Jewish and it was special Jewish
special forces or Jewish. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they would consider our special forces. But all this, I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think we have a situation where, in this case, I point this to the Israeli state, is that when you deal with monsters, you become a monster yourself. Indeed. So I'll leave it there.
Thank you very much for the call in, Gary. But yeah, I mean, some people would have said that we would have been impossible to deal with, you know, the IRA, with ETA, and yet it's strange how things develop. Now, yeah. Now, just going back to the point about the schools, if you're a Jewish kid in a Spanish school, I mean, this is a nightmare. I mean, this is. I mean, I know there is a smaller population, perhaps, but still, you know, if you're a 13-year-old Jewish boy or girl, and you've got people saying, well, you know, you're the reason, and we are creating a situation here, aren't we? Where, you know, and it's not as if they went away and they had a day to do a research project on the situation. They were probably just off TikToking each other.
Interesting to see what Rex thinks, because he didn't know anything about these, and I've just presented it to him. What is your view there, Rex?
I'm
in your wisdom.
I'm deeply shocked, actually. I had no idea this was going on. Sadly, I've not travelled this year because my wife's not been too well. But hopefully we'll be down to see you all very soon. So I'm not familiar with what's been going on in Spain politically. But from what you're saying, I think it's absolutely shocking that you're involving innocent children in worldwide politics at an age where they really have no right to be involved. Their job as a child is to learn to go to school, and everything should be apolitical, impartial, as we were educated, regardless of what was going on in the world. In my day, it was the Suez crisis, and you can name it, it goes on and on and on. I mean, there's always crisis throughout time. But and that is shocking. And it's as shocking as, dare I say, various countries acknowledging the existence of the state of Palestine. I think, yes, that should happen, but I think it was premature. I'm surprised at the countries that have actually joined in. What's interesting is that New Zealand has come out against it. And, of course, they're with America. And then you go back to the Five Eyes. Canada, England, Great Britain, and Australia, New Zealand, etc., etc. It's odd that these shenanigans, whatever you want to call them, that are going on in the Middle East are causing rifts around the world, serious rifts in people's beliefs, doctrines, etc., etc. And which is imperative that a ceasefire and an end to this, a cessation, should and hopefully be imminent. And wouldn't it be lovely if it was going to happen on the anniversary of the attack? That would be manna from heaven.
My fear is that if you start taking kids, and university protests is the Vietnam War university protests, I mean, against all sorts of things. But if you start involving children from secondary school, you're going to have a real problem here because... Yeah,
absolutely. It's like the children in Gaza. You know, when this all finishes, Giles, exactly. And Andreas, this is not going to be the end of it, because the indoctrination is virtually complete of the next generation of Gazans or Palestinians or whatever they want to call themselves. That will be the next world problem, because they will, like the man who attacked the synagogue in Manchester, he became self-indoctrinated.
And
imagine what it is when you're indoctrinated by your parents or by your school.
Yeah,
even worse.
I tend to disagree with that. I can see the fear that this indoctrination will be carried on to the next generation, and the conflict will continue. But it's not a must happen, because if you think in the 30s the Germans were indoctrinated to be Nazis, and that didn't, after the war, didn't continue.
And the Japanese as well, and the Japanese as well,
and everything. So I think if there is
a worldwide conflict, it is,
yeah. But this is, you know, if in Gaza this went, if you got a peace, a period of peace, and there is an element of improving people's lives, you know, innocent people now suffering, they can see an improvement in their lives, they might take away their radical views and move on and move forward. I truly believe that if they achieve peace and prosperity more than anything, they will say, to hell with all this. You know, I'm happy for my children to grow up in a peaceful place where they have a future and they have everything yes, there is the danger that this will be passed on to the next generation and the hatred will continue, but not necessarily has to be the case.
9527840000. Looking at some of the WhatsApps coming, because we're about to go to the news, believe it or not. Your panelists laughed at Hamas being democratically elected. Please see the Wikipedia entry. Legislative elections were held in the Palestine territories on the 25th of January 2006 in order to elect the second Palestinian Union Legislative Council, the PLC, via the Legislature of the Palestinian National Authority, the PNA. The result was a victory for Hamas. Perhaps your sub-panelists should know a little more about the subject. Meanwhile, other ones, I thought you'd laugh. Israel have created this further indoctrination. Palestinian orphans have nothing to lose. And the flotilla had nothing like the attention it should have had, particularly in the UK. People aren't just kids. They're from all walks of life, of all ages and faiths. And they were kidnapped by the Israelis and tortured. Some are still imprisoned, and the governments are doing nothing to get them released. On that one, we go to the national and international news and then back for a second half of Viewpoints.
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
Always live, and welcome back to the second half of Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown, joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo, and live from the Thames by Rex Leyland. Asking the question on the Talk Radio Europe official Facebook page, I was asking, do you think, on the second anniversary of the October 7th attacks, are we any closer to peace in Gaza? Well, it's pretty obvious, because I've got 100% saying no at the moment. So if you want to get yourself involved with that, or if you want to say, have your say on anything local, national or international, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
So, with you for the next 55 minutes or so. Rex, do you think Trump's going to get the Nobel Peace Prize on the back of this one? That sigh is a million words, Rex.
Oh, my God, what a ghastly question.
Okay, Andreas, do you think Trump's going to get... No, okay.
Are you referring to the imperious confected oath?
No, I'm referring to the President of the United States, the President of the United States, who, you know, I mean... Yeah. I know, because I know I'm going to get it in the neck. So, he... if
No.
Rex, I lost my faith in the Nobel Prize when Bob Dylan won the Nobel Prize for Literature.
Right, well...
Do you remember that one?
You're absolutely spot on. Absolutely spot on. Yeah. So, no, that's a really tricky question. And look, if he could do it, put it off today on the anniversary, I would say definitely yes. Because it would be phenomenal. However, I think it's probably not likely. But I wish it was. And other than that, no, because I'll tell you why, because he keeps asking for it. It's like a child tugging at your sleeve, keep asking for more gobstoppers or whatever it is, more licorice, or, you know, can I have, and he keeps saying, can I have the Peace Prize? And I think people who ask shouldn't necessarily get, especially as something as lauded as that. How's that, Giles?
Yeah, I think that is probably
a good analogy.
I think it's straight on the point. Yeah, you know, I was taught as a child, I want never gets. So
yeah, it's behaving like a child.
On the other hand, if he achieves a peace process and they want to give it to him, just, you know,
well, the betting,
give it to him.
Richard sent me through the betting at the moment, and he's on 2%. Along, he's actually neck and neck with Greta Thunberg for the Nobel Peace Prize. So, according to this poll,
I tell you what, Giles, I read earlier this morning an article. I'm still reading the Sunday Times article on Trump's son-in-law, who seems to be waving magic wands everywhere he goes. What a talented person!
Well, Jared Kushner.
Yes, and he's the one that's doing all the work, wow. unofficially. And it's an incredible story about what this guy's up to and from whence he came. And, of course, where is he now? He's with, where's the peace talks taking place at
Cairo.
The moment? Cairo. He's in Cairo.
But doesn't that scream of nepotism?
Totally, but it appears that for once nepotism is working, because everybody's lauding him and saying he's a wonderful chap and he's doing so well and he's so successful. And Trump listens to him.
Yeah.
So, as I say, it was an article in the Sunday Times, and it was very enlightening as to the talent of this particular chap. I mean, it's right. Incredible what he's doing.
I've been told, sorry, my apologies, it's Sharm el-Sheikh, not Cairo.
Yeah, yeah.
My apologies.
Sharm el-Sheikh.
It's, okay. It's obviously it's a resort as well, so they can go and paddle in there.
Yeah. Geography, Middle Eastern geography wasn't your best subject.
I must admit, you've got me on that one, Rex, yes, indeed. Yeah. 952-784-4000 is the phone number, studio@tre.radio is the email. Should we move on? I think we'll move on
yes,
to this
please.
One. Because at the moment, I'm just looking at the TV, live from Manchester. The Tory Conservative Party conference is in full swing. And yesterday, Kemi Badenoch was warned that she is in danger of pushing the self-destruct button on the old-style Conservative. And here we go, Conservative with a small C, the One Nation Tories that Rex, people you and I grew up with. You remember the Conservative conferences of the 1980s? Packed full of people of a certain age applauding people like Willie Whitelaw and Lord yep. Carrington and Cecil Parkinson, exactly. And yet we have this situation at the Conservative Party conference where there are empty seats. The party doesn't seem to know where it is going. And if anything, you can argue it's trying to woo voters who are apparently going to go to Reform UK.
Correct.
And surely the problem is if you try and be more Reform than Reform, or a version of Reform UK Lite, then the people will go, well, I might as well go for the full fat version and vote Reform. You're in the UK, Rex. I mean, and I know it's never believe what you see in polls or on social media, but Reform UK seems to be controlling the narrative in a way that is disproportionate right. to what they actually hold. Over to you, Rex. Right.
Well, the first thing is that after the Labour Party conference, the TV cameras swung around all the staunch Labour areas of support in the UK, and everybody in those areas were saying they would never vote for Labour again, which was really bizarre. The next point I'd like to make is that, sadly, there is a long time to go till the next election. I think it's 4 years, and sadly, a lot can happen in that time. Whether or not the Conservatives join forces with Reform, I think that's highly probable. I mean, who would have thought years ago that the Conservatives and the Liberals got into bed together, and actually it worked out very well for the country. It wasn't a bad period of government.
Yeah.
And if one winds the clock forward 4 years and say, well, people are going to switch to Reform because of what Labour are doing and saying, or not doing and saying, like something went round this morning about Mr. Starmer saying that the Home Secretaries have done so well this weekend because we didn't have one boat arriving on our shores, but he didn't mention, of course, the storm. Whatever it was this weekend, which we all had. It's that sort of mentality which is upsetting people, and the fact that they think we're stupid. We're not stupid. And these party conferences are sort of self-adulation places where they go in to pat themselves on the back or to kick somebody out or to complain about we're not doing very well. And the Labour conference was so disappointing in the fact that they didn't really criticise themselves at all. It was all head in the sand stuff that, you know, whatever we're doing, it's right for the country. Well, we know it's not right for the country. Now, the Conservatives undoubtedly have shot themselves in the foot with the last effort, I say, of government, which was pretty derisory. And probably they did set in place what we have today, which is somewhat with the initial levels of taxation, they were sort of brought in by the Conservatives and so on, and now being milked by Rachel in accounts. And of course, we've all got to look forward to the budget at the end of November. What's that going to bring? How's that going to affect the country? But the only reassuring thing about the United Kingdom is that in the world now, we're not alone. All economies, all countries have horrendous issues. And it goes back to that lovely analogy of Giles, which I think we've discussed in the past about debt, countries' debt. And debts are fine until they're called in. Mm. As long as you don't call in the debt, then you're okay. And this country is in a shocking debt, as is America, as is Germany, and so on and so on. Japan, I mean, we're all basically in trouble financially, and it's going to be a hell of a task to lift us all out of this.
To the lines we go. To the lines we go. You mentioned politics. Only one man will pick up that, Charles. Good morning. What's your name? Yeah, indeed. I'm not going to say what's your name.
It's Alf.
It's Alf.
Oh, no.
Morning, Alf.
Come on. When you bring on people who...
How are you, by the way? Sorry. Good morning to you. How are you? Okay, fine. Just checking before we get started.
Fine. Thank you very much. Fine. Weather's okay-ish now. Got a big cold earlier in the week.
Yeah, okay. That's the traffic. That's the weather forecast, done.
That's the weather forecast.
That's the traffic
forecast for the future.
What's the traffic update?
According to Rex, it's all getting gloomier. Yeah. I wish people wouldn't do this. Sucked in by the media. Sucked in all of the time by the media. Rex, after they went round all of these Labour areas, they didn't. You think the media are all going around the country? Come on. They went to a few constituencies. They spoke to a few people. If you want to go to the polls and look at the polls, but then you have to find. This is what fascinates me. Rex, have you ever been asked? Have you ever once been asked for your opinion about an election? Ever once?
But Alf, you must realise that I'm apolitical. So
Rex,
I'm not.
Have you ever been asked by anybody, because they go around the shopping centres, it's a few old women getting their shopping, getting in the way, you just go, Rex, simple question, have you ever been asked by any of these people for your opinion about what's happening in politics, ever? And you're older than me, and I don't ever remember being asked by anybody.
Right.
I'm only asked by one eminent person, and he's sitting in the studio right now.
But he's not doing a survey. He's not one of these people ticking boxes to say this is what's going to happen.
My answer to you, Alf, is no, I have never been stopped
never.
In the street.
And that's the complication with who drives the news. It's the media driving the news. It's the media driving... And I keep on saying it. I got the figure wrong. I do apologise. 36% of the people who voted in the UK voted Labour. 36, that's like one in three.
Right.
And now, all of a sudden, all of these people are coming out of the woodwork. All of these, one in three people are coming out and say, I'm never going to vote Labour again. One, they never find any of these people. Two, there's a few of them who would have voted Labour, maybe, who would change their mind. But it's not some great swimmingly thing. Nobody. I was involved in election for years. You didn't win elections unless you got around about 42% of the vote.
Alf, you're not talking to the people in the pub.
Why do I want to talk to the people in the pub? When the guy is ticking the box, says, how are you going to vote next time?
Yeah.
He's not in the pub either.
Right, Andres is waving at me, so hang on, before you two, I'll just stop this loving right now at the moment, so...
Just a very quick one, and I'm glad that Alf is there, because there is a rhetoric sort of statement that I want to put across.
Yep.
Now, the situation in the UK... I'm sitting from Spain looking at the UK, and maybe not as involved as you guys are, but what I'm looking at is a government with a thumping majority in Parliament, which 4 years ahead. Mm-hmm. The first year has been hard for them. They started badly. We all admit that. Even they would admit that.
Yep.
But they've got 4 years to go. In 4 years, they can recover, develop a plan and deliver in certain sections important things, like education or the NHS or the defence spending, all of those things, and try to improve the economy in the 4 years that they've got left with a thumping majority. So nobody's going to say you can't pass this or you cannot pass that because you can't get Parliament to agree. They've got Parliament in their pocket. They can have a plan and they can develop it.
Mm. Yep.
They go to the party conference and all they do is talk about Reform, who's got 5 seats in Parliament, and we don't know. Yes, they're ahead in the polls, but we don't know what's going to happen in 4 years' time. And the same goes for the Conservative Party, which they lost the election, rightly so, because they did very badly. They've got a new leader and they've got 4 years ahead to rebuild the party and be credible to the public. They're not doing that. They're just attaching themselves somehow to Reform again. Why are we so worried about Reform?
Can I come in, please, sir? Right. Can I have my go, please, guys? Right.
Yes, Charles.
Here we go. Okay. So here's my thing. All right. We're looking at the wrong thing here. Okay. People are losing their proverbials over migration. Small boats. I'm looking at the Conservative Party conference now. Stronger economy, stronger borders. Labour come in. We're going to, with the new Home Secretary, we're going to do the borders, yeah? Reform, it's all about the border. I'm looking at things about, the Conservatives want to bring in an ICE-style snatch squad to bring people. Is this the way we want to go? People will be happy when they have a strong economy. The Conservatives, with the small C, Alf, have always been the stability of the economy. I've always been able to try, with the city behind them. Yeah, it is, in my opinion, and again, this will be the only one, the fact that there are 6 living Conservative prime ministers, around at the moment. Not one of them is at this Conservative Party conference. There is no Kenneth Baker. There is no any of the old school guys, because this I know the ones exactly, Liz Truss, but none of them are at this conference because it doesn't speak to the sort of Conservative, Rex, come on, Mockums, that we grew up with.
That's a very good point. And of course, correct me if I'm wrong, did Blair attend the Labour conference? No, he's too busy making money. He's a capitalist.
No, Blair was at Labour Party conference. He wasn't in the
hall. Was he there?
No, you're missing my point here. The point is the fact that we are seeing the Conservatives here trying to ape the MAGA movement in this time.
Yeah.
They're trying to be more Reform UK than more Reform UK. They are listening to the noise on social media, disproportionate media coverage, and that is not where the votes lie. And thank you for my piece there, gentlemen.
And I think also as well, this wasn't... Let's set aside the bit about whether Kemi Badenoch is good enough. And again, like Andrea said about the Labour Party, the Tories have got 4 years in which to...
Absolutely.
..change it. And she may become, I wouldn't like it, but another Thatcher. But I tell you what I think went wrong, what I think has gone wrong for the Tory party this time, is the timing of their conference arrangements. I mean, all this nonsense about the hall being empty and all that. Yeah, I mean, the people ain't going to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning and queue up on a bloody great queue to go and listen to some nonsense shadow chancellor talk nonsense about nonsense. They're not going to do that. But that doesn't mean that their conference is a failing organisation. And yes, of course they've got fewer members. And of course ex-prime ministers, attract other people with them. But I think putting Badenoch on first thing, and they followed the Green Party, whose leader was on first, who I thought made an excellent speech. Didn't agree with any of it, but he made an excellent speech.
That's the party that needs to be watched, Alf, is the Greens.
No, they don't need to be. No, they'll shoot themselves in the foot.
Andreas wants to come in. Hang on a second. Andreas.
Just one point, Alf.
Of lefties don't never...
Just one point, Alf. You said about the timing. I don't think the problem is the timing. The problem is that there is no plan. And the other thing, but my view in why Reform are growing. Look, Reform's never touched power. So you got a situation where the Tories were disastrous with government, so people are completely disengaged with them. They give the chance to Labour. Labour haven't started very well, but it's still got time to recover. But they are disenchanted with Labour. So everyone who touches power, the public in general, are disenchanted. The only ones that they haven't touched power and they haven't been able to disappoint anyone are Reform. But there's no depth to Reform apart from the immigration points. I haven't seen any proposals from Reform in terms of taxation or developing the economy or improving the NHS or the real things that matter. Because in the whole thing of government, immigration is a point, but it's only a small part of the whole business of governing.
No, it's not a small part, unfortunately. In policy terms, it's miniature. The boat people are miniature. But in publicity terms and in affecting what's happening in politics in Britain, it is massive, enormous, because everybody talks about it. It's not right. Rex says what the Labour Party and all their policies is not good for the country. You've got no idea about that. It's complete speculation. However, what everybody can say immediately is immigration is a problem for the UK, irrespective of what anybody else says. The boat issue, 3% of the illegal immigrants come across in boats. Why are they such a big issue? Because they're media driven, because
Rex,
you're not paying for these people.
Rex,
we are.
Breathe, Rex, breathe. Start again.
We are paying for these people who are coming in. People are fed up. This is what's on the street, Alf. You're living in Spain. I'm living here. This is accurate reportage.
More illegal immigrants in Spain than there is in the UK.
Okay.
Don't forget that this isn't an English...
Hang on, okay.
It's not an English issue. It's not even a British issue. This is a European issue. We're all paying for it.
Just one very quick point I want to, for the two of you. To present to solve the immigration problem as the solution to all the problems of the country is a mistake and is wrong and is a lie, okay? And what Reform are doing, are presenting, we solve the immigration problem, the country's going to flourish. It's not going to flourish, be solving that problem. It is a problem, needs to be addressed, but that's not the whole picture. There's loads of things in government that need to be dealt with. There's some reforms that have to take place, and there have some investment that have to take place, and all of that has got nothing to do with immigration. Immigration is one of the problems, but it's not the solution to all the problems of the country.
And what Reform are saying also, which is totally inaccurate and totally wrong, is they're going to kick out existing, a bit like Trump, kick out existing workers, etc. We do need people to support our national services, etc., etc., etc.
Reform are talking about
eviction of these people, which is wrong. And Reform will have to refine all that.
UKIP was knocking around. Just remember what was being said about let's have a vote to leave Europe. That was about immigration. That was Farage. It's the right wing. They're always there. They've been there for 40 years. They've been there since the brown shirts. They're never going to go away. You know, they're whatever you think. That's why you have, you know, opposition political things. And quite right, the single biggest thing that's the issue is, is PR a solution? Is first past the post a solution? Is Americanization elections the way forward? Is dictatorship, you know, Russian dictatorship or dictatorship? We have this whole problem at the moment in the world about how we run our politics so that people feel part of the decision-making process. And I think, you know, we have a huge problem, and disenchantment with politics starts with, why do I want to get involved? Nobody listens to me.
Right, we're going to go for a break.
That was very apt, wasn't it?
It was very good indeed. Go for a break, and then we get back with more Viewpoint. Al, thanks for joining me this morning.
Cheers, Al. Nice to talk.
Always live, always lively. Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown. More after this.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. We're into the last 25 minutes of this morning's Viewpoint. Doesn't time fly when you're having fun? Joined in the studio by Andres Gallardo, and on his small boat. No, not really on his houseboat.
How dare you?
Just Alf.
How dare you?
Sorry, Rex. Calmate, please. We've already had you jousting with Alf. I'm just going to go to the WhatsApps before you come back.
I just tell you, interrupt as usual, very quickly. My phone.
Yes, go on.
A dozen Tory councillors have just defected to Reform.
Yeah.
Just come in now.
Good for them.
You can't make it up. With friends like these, as the saying goes. But this is my point about, you know, since the night of the long knives with Boris Johnson getting rid of, you know, that centrist, as I said, Rex, you and I grew up with this, you know, the centrist, you know, the Middle England view, which it seems to have been steamrolled into sort of MAGA light at the moment. So, of course, you're going to get people who are in politics who want to go on what is seen as the winning side, quote unquote, and they will, you know, the Conservatives have decided to go more right wing, and therefore you have this happening, Rex.
Yeah. No, right. I agree with you. Definitely. So,
WhatsApp's in. Only 4%, here we go, only 4% of immigrants coming on small boats, and very few are found to be illegal when processed. Yes, let's blame the immigrants. The problem is the ultra-right wing press, thank you, and constant platforming of people like Farage. This whole thing about leaving the European Convention of Human Rights is also, you know, is quite threatening. Right, here we go. Just a couple of points. Morning, Peter. A couple of points. Farage is great at saying that... Sorry, it's great. Farage is great at saying that's the problem. How many boats came to the UK before Brexit? You got a misspelling there. Also, what about the petrol attack on a mosque and the two Muslim schoolgirls attacked? And also, look at Reform Run Kent. All other bits and pieces. So, okay, so Reform are in the fortunate position of that most of their potential voters don't have a brain to think with. Stupid? Then explain why anybody would vote for a man who made the UK poorer and has lied multiple times. Here we go. Are you ready, Rex? Ready for this one? If Rex is apolitical, then I'm a banana.
I've never professed my politics other than Brexit. I was a Brexiteer.
Bendy, how are the straight bananas working out for you, Rex?
Well, do you know what? I have an obsession about bananas.
Luckily, we've got a call in here, so I go live to live before we get taken off the air. Morning caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
I'd like to thank Alf. I'm probably a Conservative voter, but I seem to agree with everything Alf says. Very sensible. And the other thing, just Rex just said 12 councillors have just defected. Does he mean that the number that have defected, according to the radio this morning, is 14 so far? And that's all of them, not this morning.
Well, I've just flashed up on the phone. That's what I saw.
Well, I should be going to, as we speak, right, you guys speak along as I'm going to delve into the archives. Right, so we'll be checking on the, what's your take then? Do you think that the Conservatives are becoming more like Reform Light, in your opinion?
Well, having lived here 40 years, quite frankly, I've given up trying to understand UK politics.
Right, fair enough.
just a quick question. Have you made any sense of Spanish politics living here?
Yes, we might get a budget at some point.
I tend to hide my head in sand on Spanish politics as well. At 85, I decided that it's time for me to give up making decisions on politics.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call in there. Rex, yes, your thoughts?
I was going to tell you about an apple banana.
Tell me about your obsession with bananas then,
just like to lighten the load, I do eat a banana every single morning for breakfast. I have an obsession about how the condition of the banana should be, the colour. It should be, green and yellow rather than the other way around, and so on and so on. But my obsession, which we can't sadly get here, and I'm flying the flag for Spain, I think the Canarian bananas that you buy in Spain are out of this world. The flavour is so different to the Cavendish. But the other day, I'll be brief, I found in my local store something called an apple banana. It's a midget banana. And believe it or not, when you eat it, even though it's a banana, it tastes of apple. It's incredible. And they originated from the Philippines, and now they're grown all over the world. But I've never had one before. So if you see an apple banana, try it. And it has to be eaten very ripe. If you eat it underripe, it's inedible.
Right.
That's it. Thank banana you for... lecture over for the day.
Thank you for that. Thank you for bringing us up.
Interesting that you said, Rex, that you were a Brexiteer. I don't know you still are. But it is interesting because the finest hour, if you want to call it that, of Nigel Farage was the success of the Brexit vote.
Correct.
Where one of the promises that they made there was the control of the borders and just to control immigration and, all these things that were going to happen. None of that has happened. In fact, it's got worse. Do you still consider that it's been a success? Because the track record of Farage is failure.
Here we go.
You're absolutely right. Andreas, as well documented on your part. I've said this before on the show, Charles, I'll say it again. Even though I was a Brexiteer and believed in all the things that it stood for, the sad part, it was delivered pathetically by Boris Johnson, and everything that was promised never really materialized. And I think that is the failure, which is why one tends to be a little bit skeptic now historically when you're looking back. But had everything been delivered as promised by Farage and Boris, who obviously stood in front of him, I think it would be different. And yes, it would have covered many political issues that we are confronted with today. But just quickly on the immigration thing, and again, I've said this before, that I support every refugee coming from a war zone. What I cannot support are economic migrants, and there is a big difference between the two.
Right.
And this country has always opened its arms to people from war-torn places, going right the way back to the very beginning. And why these economic migrants are coming here and expect us to look after them, I think that is highly presumptive, and I don't think it's right.
Okay, looking just quickly, 16 Tory councillors have defected. 17 to reform on day three of the Conservatives' annual conference. Badenoch has said, we are shedding a lot of the baggage. Now, do you remember John Major and his famous quote of you know, the nasty party, he called them bustards, not the actual word? That is a real sideswipe, and it's going to really, really, really make it interesting between Kimmy Badenoch and Jen Rick and the Conservative Party, because, you know, the theory is that obviously James Cleverly should have been the Conservative leader, but they managed to mistime the voting or such like.
So it was a disaster, the whole thing.
Yeah. One thing that is interesting about is that the polls showed that I think it was 50% of Tory members don't want Kemi Badenoch as the leader of the party. Correct me if my figures are wrong, but I think that's what. But I, if I'm not mistaken, she was selected not that long ago. Was it the members that elected her?
The Conservative Party, yeah. Yes. Membership. Yes. Yeah.
So they've very quickly changed their minds, it seems to me, because she's just been elected, and now they want to for her to withdraw and choose someone else. So I think she, as I said before, she's got 4 years ahead. She needs to rebuild the party, make it strong, set some policies that make sense, and they can be proven policies to improve the UK in many sectors, more importantly, the economic sector, where people feel a little bit, you know, wealthy again. But when I talk to English people, they tell me we are poorer than we were a few years ago. Hence inflation and all of the things that's happened in the UK. But they feel poorer. So if they could set up a plan of policies that are credible, she could rebuild the party. I don't know why they need to just go there and say, oh, you're behind in the polls, so get rid of her. I think that's a panic reaction. And in politics, you have to be very, you know, well-balanced to be able to move forward.
I think you've certainly made a few good points there, but it was actually mentioned, I watched a political programme late last night, and I think it was said that the last thing the Conservatives want at the moment is another leadership contest. They've had too many, and they want stability. But you're right, whether or not Badenoch was the right choice remains to be seen, and as you say, she's still got 4 years. But it's not looking good. It's not looking good. And in essence, the Conservatives are in disarray.
Right.
And they need to organise themselves a little bit better.
Richard has sent me in through a latest general election prediction, just at present, nothing. Party Conservative, 24%. In 2024, they got 24%, 121 seats. Predicted votes, 17%, 17.2% the Conservatives, which means they would have 15 seats, is that correct? Yeah. Labour, 34.7% last time round, so they got 412 seats. Predictions are saying they would get 50... No, sorry. So Conservatives would get 51 seats. Labour would get 153. Lib Dems, would get 71. Reform, 301 at the moment. This is the prediction. Yeah. Greens 4, Scottish National Party 41, Plaid Cymru having 4, Plaid Cymru getting 5, excuse me, so and 4 for the other ones. That's, you know, a week is a long time in politics. 4 years before the next election is an eternity.
It's a long time.
What
you kind of do is panic every time you read a poll, you know, because polls are done every week. You know, if you're going to panic, you have to set a plan. and to be able to translate that, to send the message of your plan to people so they believe in you and they can vote for you when the time comes. But if you set a panic and you start change things because there's a poll saying that you're behind, that means you're proving that you haven't got a plan.
Yeah.
And they're just panicking and you know, putting fires every day to just put a fire here, put a fear out, a fire out elsewhere. And that's not giving credibility to the party, so people are not going to vote for you.
Can you see then, you know, really hitting panic button and, you know, Rex, if what happens if the Conservatives really hit the panic button and go for a Conservative Reform alliance? Can you, I mean...
I think that at the moment, the way things stand, in my opinion, that's highly probable, in my opinion. As I already mentioned earlier, who would have thought that the Conservatives would have got into bed with the Liberals, but they did, and it was successful. So it's not, you know, it's not as bleak as it looks or as it sounds. Sometimes these things do work out rather well, and I think, as I said, the Conservative Liberal coalition, I thought, was very, very successful. And certainly for the people, I think the electorate benefited from that.
I'm interested in that one because you say that and there's possibility of that, but the Spanish experience between the Partido Popular and Vox, and they wanted nothing to the ultra-conservative Partido Popular.
The job here between the Conservative Party and Vox, what they are trying to do very, very much, especially the Conservative Party, is to separate themselves from Vox. So always finding, they don't want to be associated with the Vox policies. The media and the government are raging against Vox, and what they're doing is associating the Conservative Party to the same kind of policies. So this is what the message is sent, is this is what you will get if you vote Conservative. You're going to get Vox, you know, through the back door. So the job is to make sure that the Conservative Party are different to Vox, where in the Conservative Party in the UK, they seemed to be getting closer, nearly merging with Vox.
But you hit the nail on the
reform,
you hit the nail on the head because you said the media are against Vox. And if you go to the UK and Rex, you look at the Mail, the Express, everything else, it is. When you're walking through the leafy, so, you know, relief. If you're heading towards Montcombs, Rex, you must see people reading papers, and that is very much, you know, immigrants are going to come over, they're going to eat your children, and they're, you know,
you're
that's,
right.
That sort of thing.
They stir it up. Charles, they do stir it up. They express the Mail, undoubtedly.
You see, the media in Spain is a little bit different because the Socialist Party control a very large chunk of the media. They've got TV1, TV2, Sexta, El País, which is the, you know, the newspaper with more circulation and everything. So the Socialist Party...
Times of Spain, is it?
Sorry?
El País is the Times of Spain.
It's the Guardian.
Oh, the Guardian of Spain.
But it's the largest newspaper. TV1 is the state control, but the Socialist Party control the state.
The
tradition.
Most conservative then is it Abethe or is it Mundo?
The conservatives, you got Abethe and El Mundo.
Yeah.
Antena 3 is another TV channel, is quite sit on the fence type of thing. So the when I say the media, I'm talking about the socialist media trying to incorporate Vox into the Conservative Party, saying they're the same thing, don't vote for them because they're terrible, look what's going to happen. And then the job of the Conservative Party here is say, no, we're not like them, we're completely different. So they try to separate. Reform and the Conservative seems to me that it's a different...
Before I take a break, Rex, are you standing by the guardrail? Because you're going to need to grip onto it, okay?
All right.
Okay. Farage just tweeted, this morning we have announced that 20 Conservative councillors have defected to Reform UK. The Conservative Party is finished. Rex, can you still hear me? You haven't fallen out of board.
I hear what you're saying. Just very quickly, to touch on what Andrea said about the media.
Yeah.
I mean, we have obviously BBC, ITV and Sky. And a lot of people here are concerned about the bias of BBC.
GB News.
ITV are wherever. And I actually find watching Sky, you get a more balanced news report or a news bulletin. That, I just throwing that in, that's all.
Going to go for the last break and then back, and we'll have about 6 minutes more of Viewpoint, so stand by your beds.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Thanks to Iberian Tax for the sponsorship of the show. To the lines we go. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, hi, it's John in Meehan.
Hi, John.
Just on those figures of the councillors, they'd need 1,200 councillors for 1% to have defected. So 12 or 20 is very small.
Yeah, I know, but they're playing the game, aren't they? That's the thing which the reform are doing very, very well. Thanks for the call. Thanks very much. Julie's come in. The problem with the UK is both Tories and Labour are trying to catch the reform voters who will never vote for them. Meanwhile, the core centrist voters will migrate to Lib Dems and Greens. Rex, OK, we've got 5 minutes. Can you see yourself voting Liberal, Rex?
Well, it's funny you should say that, Giles, because before I became self-employed, which was sadly many years ago, I did vote Liberal. I have to admit that, and I did it because those were my politics of the day. I even remember a story, which is really a bit silly.
Right, okay.
My late mother was a member of the Hurlingham Club in Fulham, which you may know
about. The struggle is real, Rex.
In those days, she'd moved down from the north to be near me because my father had died and blah, blah, blah. So, but in those days, you were allowed to pass on membership to your next of kin if that person died. And she said, I'll be able to pass it on to you and so on and so on. And I said, I'm sorry, Mum, I am not interested in joining that right-wing club. And I never joined it. I'm now a member of the Arts Club, Chelsea
right.
Arts Club,
super. Instead,
which I think is a bit more my political.
Marvellous. Andres, you were going to say something about the list about Liberals.
I was so embarrassed. I voted Liberal once.
So what?
Yeah. In the council elections. So, yeah, there's nothing wrong with voting Liberal. One thing I was going to say, just very quickly, I said before that one of the things that reform has got in their favour is that they've never been in power, so they haven't been able to disappoint a lot of people. Well, the Conservatives and Labour have been in power for, you know, many times. And you sort of can extrapolate this to Vox as well. Vox, they've never been in power. They haven't been able to, you know, and that this enchantment of people, how disappointed they are with the main parties, are driving the vote towards these fringe parties. They're not fringe anymore because, I mean, Vox is expected to have, well, they already have 50 MPs or there or thereabouts. So they're not fringe parties, but they're going that way. I've got friends in my close circle that were conservative voters, always been, and they're all saying, next time we're going to vote for Vox because they're disappointed. And not because they really believe in what they say or anything, but they say, let's give a chance to someone that's not the usual suspects that they've had power
Fox,
for so many
Fox
years.
Fox and Marbella want to cancel Halloween because they say it's an imported American thing and that we should have more sort of Catholic-based celebrations.
Well,
it's not.
On that one, I agree with them. I don't like Halloween, but
from this studio, how dare you like Halloween?
I don't like Halloween. No, nothing to do with politics.
But seriously, Halloween as children.
But seriously, I mean, if you look at the history, we've only got 2 minutes left. Otherwise, this we could go into Stephen Richardson's program, and I can see he'll be sharpening his 2HB on that one. But this is the thing. Panel, parties that have stood, you knew where Labour was, you knew where the Conservatives, the small C Rex, as you and I did, was. To have these major parties suddenly going, trying to woo, reform because that they think that's the will of the people, surely, Rex, I mean, is this the direction we want our politics to go?
I think that there's just desperation in the air. And I think that politicians are going to try anything on. To either retain power or to get themselves into power. And a lot of people are saying that once they're in power, they're not very effective. They lose memory. They lose track as to why they actually are there in the first place. And I think when you look back at politicians, I mean, obviously the one that stands out is Churchill, followed by Margaret Thatcher, and so on and so on. I think the politicians have to be a little bit more definite and a little bit more expletive, in the sense that they need to inform us better in order to achieve our vote.
Andreas. Yeah, I would just say to both the Labour and Conservatives, especially the Labour Party, focus on the job in hand. Which you've got government, you've got the security of a majority in Parliament. You can do a very good job. Just concentrate on that. Stop looking at the polls in the rear mirror all the time. Ignore those and just concentrate on your policies and delivering the policies, which is what people voted you in for.
Just a final
look. When's the next Spanish election, by the way?
2027.
Right. Just a quick one that we had the poll running on the Facebook page. On the second anniversary of the October 7th attacks, are we any closer to peace? 1% said yes. 16% said don't know. 83% of the people who voted on the poll said that we are no closer to peace.
So, I hope they're wrong.
I hope we all hope they're wrong.
Well, let's pray today that something's going to happen. Let's look up to the stars, look up to God and say, please make it happen.
Rex, as always, great to have you on the show. Take care.
Thank you, Giles, and enjoy the rest of the week. And
Andreas, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, and nice talking to you, Rex.
This show will be repeated at 7 o'clock. Stephen Ritson is up next.
An opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.